Again, the very first case this morning is In Re Interest of Christina S. Council may approach. Again, this is In Re Interest of Christina S. May approach. Good morning.
Derek Chiraway, I'm appearing on behalf of Benjamin Shepherd, the father in this case. I think the majority of what I've already put down has been placed into a brief, so I'll try and keep this a little brief, and then if the judges have any questions. Yeah, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. This case was opened in January of 2017. Effectively, it was opened because of a child abuse case. It was later on taken care of. It was pled out by my client, Mr. Shepherd, and county court as a misdemeanor. Part of the reason why Mr. Shepherd had pled to that was because he was under the impression that he was going to be worked through the juvenile case. Christina was removed from his custody almost immediately in December of 2016, prior to this case being opened. He started therapeutic visitation with Christina in February of 2017. That therapy was terminated at some point in August of 2017 by Dr. Liske. That was also placed in the brief. My client has tried numerous times to try and reconcile or to fix the relationship he's had with his daughter. We did a second set of therapeutic visitation that began in the fall of 2017. That also was unsuccessful.
She was the victim of the assault case, wasn't she?
Yes, Your Honor. And to put some context into that, the allegations in that case effectively came from there was testimony by Mr. Shepherd that there was some arguments and disputes about whether or not Christina could go out and do some things. At the time, she was 15 years old. Mr. Shepherd believes that he didn't handle the situation as best as he could. And one of the reasons why we're looking at the juvenile case is how he could maybe fix that issue. But as the court is well as the attorney, sometimes the allegations that are made in these cases are sometimes different than what is really happening in real life. Everyone has their own perspective of what's happening. I know I myself, when I was a child, was disciplined by my father, and I think this is the one occurrence that ever happened. I was arguing with him. He grabbed me by the arm and took me to the bedroom because I told him I didn't want to go. But my mom came home, I told her he was basically beating me. That obviously was not what happened. But in any sense, we can't really tell what happened that day, but that was the only incident that was ever brought up and was ever discussed regarding Christina and her father, Benjamin, that brought this case before the juvenile court.
What was the initial permanency plan in the case?
The initial permanency plan, and you'll have to excuse me, I didn't come onto this case until later on, until the fall of 2017. The initial permanency plan was for unification. Guardianship was added as a concurrent plan about 10 months in.
And you objected to that? Your client objected to that?
Correct.
So let's talk about that, particularly as it relates to your argument that there was no finding of unfitness on the part of your client.
From what I could tell, when we had this hearing, the court was focused more on what the well-being of Christina was and not whether or not my client or Mr. Shepherd was able to adequately take care of his child. As I placed in my brief, he has another child, and this is Christina's sister, is still at his home. This child was, I think there was a case that was open, but it was later on dropped. She was never removed from the home, or I think she was removed initially, but then returned immediately. So
do you think of finding of unfitness is necessary before a guardianship can be ordered in a juvenile case?
I believe that we should look at the same standards for guardianships in juvenile cases as we do in this probate case. What the court was more interested in looking at is the fact that the doctors, in this case Dr. Liske and Dr. Pattitz, were expressing concerns that Christina was having anxiety attacks and panic attacks following any contact with her father. These were all self-reported by Christina. There was no collateral information that was ever gathered by either of the doctors to corroborate whether or not these attacks were actually taking place. So we have self-reporting evidence showing that the contact is not good. Doctors themselves indicating that Christina herself has indicated she didn't want to see him. And Dr. Pattis herself later said that Christina had indicated, like, maybe this is my client who indicated, that Christina was more open to contact if the guardianship were put in place. We're effectively letting a 15, 16, 17-year-old child dictate what the terms of a parental-child relationship would be.
And the proposed guardians, are they her current foster placement?
Correct. And so Christina's been with this foster family for the majority of the time that she's been removed. I think May 2017 is when she was placed there. During that time, she's had, from what I can see, free rein of whatever she wants to do. She's had, the evidence was submitted at the court during that hearing that she's missed extensive amounts of school, was failing classes, was not doing the things that my client indicated that when she was in his custody, she did.
Your client agrees with the therapist that reunification is not possible right now, correct?
I think at this point, my client is more concerned with just trying to bridge that relationship he has with his daughter. And at this time, we're looking at her turning 18 in September. At that point, I don't know how much longer the court would have the ability to even bridge that gap.
So is it your contention that she should just hang in limbo until she reaches the age of majority?
My client, when we opened this or when we filed the appeal, and I apologize, I had to continue this a couple times because of deaths in my family, but I was hoping to get in a little sooner, but I think he had hoped to have reunification when we filed. I'm not sure if that's going to be completely possible at this point, but part of my appeal was also to allow for the visitation. And again,
it didn't appear even the therapeutic visitation was going very well.
The therapeutic visitation, again, coming from what the doctors have noted, was a lot with Christina saying she did not want to have contact with her father. And then at one point, the therapeutic visitation was terminated by Dr. Liske by what she claimed was because Mr. Shepherd became aggressive and using vulgar language, but she was unable to actually specify or clarify how any of that language was or what he was doing. She did testify it wasn't physical or threatening in any way, just say he maybe raised his voice. And because Mr. Shepherd's not here, just to illustrate, he's about my size. He's got a pretty booming voice like I do. He's not soft-spoken. So I could see how somebody might interpret that as being abrasive. But if what we're looking at in a juvenile case is to reunify, especially at that point, and to try and do reasonable efforts to do that visitation, I think we should have done more, and again, I wasn't on the case at that point, to do more to try and facilitate that visitation rather than simply terminating it and allowing or effectively.
Well, the court allowed for therapeutic visitation in the future in its order, didn't it?
I don't believe it did. I think that, if you bear with me, I do have the order. I believe that the court effectively said no visitation was going to be ordered. Any contact shall occur in a therapeutic session if and when visits are renewed at the direction of a licensed therapist.
Right, left it in the hands of someone else.
And because we're in Hastings, Nebraska, and I look at this at the Tri-City, we go to Kearney and Grand Island and we get these extra therapists in, but it's just hard to try and find therapists at that point. And all we really did, or the department did at this point, is find two therapists to try and do the therapy. They didn't really look any further. So I don't know how that's going to work if they're unwilling or if the court's unwilling to find a therapist who's could do that therapeutic visitation. I would like to reserve my time for rebuttal, Your Honors.
Thank you. Good morning, Ms. Waldron.
May it please the court, my name is Cassie Baldwin and I am a deputy county attorney in and for Adams County, Nebraska, and I represent the state in this matter. The record reflects that Christina became a state ward in January of 2017 after an altercation between her and her father. The record also reflects that the father of the juvenile was charged and placed on probation, ultimately for assault, with the juvenile as the victim of that assault. Also, the matter led to Christina being adjudicated under 43247 Subdivision 3A in April of 2017. Thereafter, the record reflects that about every 90 days, the court reviewed the matter and adopted case plans that were presented to the court. The record also reflects that in February of 2017, therapeutic intervention started with Christina and Dr. Liske. That therapy was individual therapy sessions between Dr. Liske and the juvenile, at least initially. And then the record reflects that Dr. Liske attempted to start family therapy between the juvenile and her father in the summer of 2017. After three sessions of family therapy, Dr. Liske terminated those sessions due to an incident that occurred at her office in which she said that the father became verbally aggressive, that she felt that therapy did not need to occur at her office anymore.
Was that the same incident where the daughter, Christina, said some pretty awful things to her father?
I believe so, yes. It was all part of those three sessions that Dr. Liske had between Christina and Ben.
Well, can we fast forward a moment and talk about why the guardianship was pursued? I don't know that particular rationale is in the record, but given the age of this juvenile, let's talk about it.
Yes, so the juvenile was initially removed in 2017, and by the time the petition for guardianship had been filed by the guardian ad litem, the juvenile had been a state ward for almost 18 months at that point. And so it's the state's contention that the petition for guardianship was needed because the child deserves permanency. The child should not have to linger in foster care indefinitely, you know, to wait uncertain parental maturity. And so at that time, the state believed that the guardianship was in the best interest, and the court had already adopted a concurrent goal of guardianship because we weren't making progress, sufficient progress, towards the goal of
But nothing really will change for the ward, right? She's still going to be with the same foster family?
Yes. As far as I understand, the juvenile has been placed with her current foster family since early on in the case, and that placement will continue with the guardianship. If the guardianship weren't to be established, then I imagine that the placement would still continue with the current foster parents.
So why not pursue termination of parental rights?
I think a lot of considerations go into that, primarily her age. Given that she's going to be 18 soon, I don't know if the foster parents were necessarily willing to adopt, but they may have been willing to provide guardianship.
Isn't part of the problem here that the facts wouldn't suggest the dad is unfit?
Well, I know that in the court's order that who approved the guardianship, they didn't specifically find that the father of the juvenile was unfit, but they did find that the guardianship was in the best interest of the juvenile. And so I think it's implied within the finding that the guardianship is within the best interest that the juvenile's father is unfit. Just like in terminations, you know, you have to have one of those statutory grounds, and then in addition to one of the statutory grounds for termination, you also have to show that the termination of parental rights is in the juvenile's best interest. And when you're looking at best interest for termination, basically the court has to find that the parent is unfit when they find that termination is in the best interest. I think it's no different when you create a guardianship out of a 3A case, that when the court determines that the guardianship is in the best interest of the juvenile, they're also finding that the parent is unfit.
Are you conceding that that is a necessary part?
I do believe that it's a necessary for the court to determine, based on the evidence, that the parent is unfit. I just don't think it needs to be explicit in its order. I think by finding that the guardianship is in the best interest, they are also implicitly implying that the parent is unfit. And I think in this case particularly, the record reflects that the juvenile's father is unfit. There was Because the evidence reflects that while the juvenile's father may be able to provide for the juvenile's physical needs, such as housing, clothing, transportation, he is not able to provide for her emotional and her mental needs. The juvenile has been a state ward for a substantial amount of time. We have utilized two different therapists to facilitate family therapy. Both of those family therapies have stopped at the discretion of the therapist, because each therapist found that it was detrimental to the juvenile to continue with that therapeutic contact between the juvenile and her father.
But how does that reflect on his unfitness?
Because I think the record reflects that he is unable to meet her emotional needs. His own testimony, he doesn't recognize the diagnoses that were provided to the court. He doesn't see her as needing therapeutic intervention for the anxiety and depression that was testified regarding to. I mean, I think both Dr. Liske and Dr. Pattitz testified with regard to the fact that she was exhibiting signs of depression and anxiety after sessions with her father. And so for those reasons, contact was detrimental to her. And so it was in her best interest not to have that contact.
So would you agree that parental unfitness doesn't have to just mean a personal deficiency? It can mean an incapacity to parent, which is the circumstance here, where he's incapable of parenting because of the emotional issues between him and his daughter?
Absolutely, yes.
Is it a problem that he's got another daughter with him, that there doesn't appear to be any issues going on there?
I think you have to take the relationship between parent and child with each parent and child. I can't really comment on the relationship between he and the other child in the home because she was not adjudicated. She was not made. I think initially she was made a ward of the state, but ultimately that case was dismissed. But I think her needs may be different than that of Christina, which is reflected in the record with regard to Christina's emotional and her mental health needs, and how the father is incapable of providing for those needs, which is pretty apparent based on the fact that we can't even have family therapy sessions without it escalating. So if we can't even have family therapy, how are we to be able to reunify her, put her back in the home, and risk the fact that it might escalate again and lead to the same situation which led to Christina being adjudicated in the first place?
So it's your position there doesn't have to be an explicit finding of unfitness then?
Correct. I think the finding of unfitness is implied within the finding that the guardianship is in the juvenile's best interest. Just like with TPRs, there's a finding that termination is in the best interest of the juvenile, and implied within that finding is that the parent is unfit. And so I think it's no different with the guardianships. I don't think the court needs to put in its order, we hereby find.
Do you have any authority for that?
I don't. In reviewing the case law, there doesn't appear to be a lot of case law with regard to guardianships that are created within a 3A proceedings. There's obviously a lot with regard to guardianships being created in the probate court, but obviously the case law that is out there with regard to guardianships within a 3A just basically say that if the juvenile court has jurisdiction over a juvenile within a 3A, then the guardianship or the petition for guardianship would need to be filed within that case and not separately within the probate court.
So in the probate cases, is the finding of unfitness required to be specified?
I believe so. I'm not all that familiar with the probate court, as I don't practice within that arena, but I believe, based on my review of the case law, that there does need to be a finding of unfitness to that guardianship. No, Your Honor. Based on the my arguments in my brief, as well as the evidence that's been presented to the court, the state would ask that the court affirm the lower court's decision and approve the guardianship.
We have time for rebuttal. 1 minute and 40 seconds for rebuttal.
Just briefly to touch on a couple of comments that were made by Ms. Baldwin. And the court had asked whether or not, or why a TPR was not pursued in this case, and why was it a guardianship. And when I look at the age of this girl, I see a guardianship as a de facto termination at this point. It's basically in the guise of the termination, because at 18 years old or 17 years old, I mean, what else can be done at this point?
But his parental rights aren't terminated.
Correct.
A guardianship is a temporary custodial situation that can be changed.
Correct, but after all the litigation that would be going on after this point to try and terminate that guardianship, it'd be almost effectively and being unable to actually do that. So again, I look at it as almost as a de facto termination without actually saying termination.
But he could still pursue visitation even through a guardianship, should it be approved on a therapeutic level, according to the order.
As unlikely as that would probably take place, because as I pointed out, therapeutic visitation was not really pursued too much by the department, and we only had the two therapists, and part of that was through Mr. Shepard's own reaching out to Dr. Pattitz to try and find that therapy.
So can we find an implied determination of unfitness?
I don't believe so. I think that this needs to be explicitly stated in the order and in the findings by the court. The petition itself for the guardianship specifically said they're asking the court to find that the parent is unfit or unwilling to parent his child. And so I think by that language itself, we have to find that explicit language in the order and the findings.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for being here. We will take the matter under advisement, and counsel is excused.
Thank you.